The CSIS Africa program has undertaken a major project looking at the risk to stability in 10 countries in sub-Saharan Africa in the coming decade. I'm pleased to be joined by the author of our report on Kenya, Dr. Joel Barkin. Dr. Barkin is a senior associate with the CSIS Africa program and an expert on issues of democratization and governance across Anglophone Africa. Dr. Barkin, Kenya has faced major instability in the recent past, with serious post-election violence breaking out in early 2008. Have the causes of this violence been addressed?
To a great extent, they have. The 2007 election and the violence that followed was really a wake-up call for Kenya. Many people were pessimistic at the time, and yet the formation of the coalition government on February 28, 2008, did produce an arrangement which has made remarkable progress in the last 2 or 3 years, notwithstanding the doubts of many observers, particularly, I might say, by those outside the country and here in Washington. Specifically, and most importantly, the coalition government has stayed together. It hasn't fallen apart. And it has produced a new constitution. That constitution has a number of very important provisions which address sources of Kenya's instability in the past, and secondly, go a long way in advancing democratic governance in Kenya. And my general argument would be that the more democratic Kenya, the more likely that it's likely to address its problems of instability, particularly those revolving around its major fault lines of ethnic conflict that have bedeviled it in the past.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you to elaborate a little bit on the Constitution. And as you note in your report, implementation has been patchy so far. So we're wondering, would you agree that the fate of the Constitution is closely tied with the future stability of the country?
I would agree with that. And in terms of passing approximately 21 pieces of legislation, the Kenya National Assembly, Kenya's parliament, is lagging in that regard. Nonetheless, a number of developments have occurred since the referendum of August of last year, that is August 2010, when Kenyans overwhelmingly adopted the new constitution. Specifically, the following provisions. A major provision of the Constitution, beyond various provisions for its Bill of Rights, for example, which is quite extensive, patterned after the South African Bill of Rights, but in terms of addressing the sources of conflict that have undercut stability in Kenya in the past, the formula for devolving government to 47 counties is a major step forward. Why is that so? It's because Kenya's ethnic groups are of vastly unequal size. The largest group, the Kikuyu, 17% of the population. The second largest group, the Kalenjins, about 13 or 14% of the population, and the Luhya, about the same. Kenyan politics has usually revolved around ever-shifting coalitions between two or three of the largest groups to essentially command a majority of the Kenyan electorate. What happened in 2007 is that the electorate was split right down the middle, 50-50. There was alleged fraud, and the results of the election were not accepted by the losers. The challenge in Kenya has been to address the demands of those ethnic groups that have been historically shut out of the political and economic process in Kenya. That mainly means almost all of the non-Kikuyu ethnic groups. But some of those groups are also the source of instability. And this new constitution, by devolving government to 47 counties, means that the largest groups are broken up into several pieces, so that over time they will probably cease to function as single big ethnic blocks, where while the smallest groups, or the smaller groups, if not the very most smallest, will now have a county government of their own. In other words, minorities are going to have some form of government, even though they're not necessarily part of a majority coalition that controls the central government at the national level. That fact, combined with the fact that 15% of the country's annual budget will automatically be shifted to the counties, means that the counties have real resources and to provide needed services for their citizens, such as schools, health clinics, secondary roads, and the like. So power is being, if you will, split up, not as concentrated in the past. It's a much more pluralistic situation, and that means that political alliances will also require more compromise, because any political alliance that will form in order to command a majority at the national level will require compromise and bargaining across more players than in the past. Kenya is unlikely to be ruled in the future by two or three or four ethnic kingpins. Rather, it will be 47 local leaders, not all with equal power, but much more equal power than in the past.
And certainly this is a powerful change. In your paper, though, you discuss the ongoing struggle between those politicians who still wish to run things the old way through informal networks and by rallying support and appeals to ethnicity. And also you contrast this with the modernizers who seek a more robust democracy. Who's winning that battle today, and will the outcome determine Kenya's future stability?
The outcome will indeed determine Kenya's long-term future stability, and it's my assessment and hope, and I hope I don't confuse the two, that it's the modernizers, or more accurately, reformers in alliance with opportunists. That is to say, you have an emerging coalition in Kenya that I believe will eventually carry the day, that consists of a group of leaders, probably no more than 15 to 20%, who are really true reformers. They see Kenya's past, and they also see the potential of Kenya's future. They want Kenya to evolve into a modern democratic state based on the rule of law, accountable to the population, and one that can be a player in the international community. They also realize that given the fact that Kenya doesn't have oil or other extractive resources, that Kenya's way to be competitive in the world is indeed to compete, ultimately manufacture things or be the source of services, continue in tourism and the like. But that really requires political stability and the rule of law, and they want that. There are probably another 30 or 40% who still see things very much through an ethnic lens, but they're also beginning to realize that the politics of the past have failed them and have particularly failed their communities. I'm talking about leaders of some of the minority communities. And so little by little, they are in alliance with the reformers. And then there's the old guard that essentially wants to play by the old rules. I think they are being progressively squeezed out. They campaigned vigorously against the new constitution. They lost. Some of their elements tried to unilaterally appoint a new chief justice and attorney general. They were beaten back by parliament. In the vetting of the candidates for the new chief justice, they put forth people who were not particularly progressive. They were rebuffed there. So what you see here is that in a series of recent confrontations, the reformers and the modernizers, as you put it, have carried the day, and that's what makes me optimistic.
And what role are the prosecution of the alleged ringleaders in the post-election violence by the International Criminal Court likely to play in the near future?
Well, the ringleaders are the spoilers. There are two different groups. There are three who are very closely allied to Mwai Kibaki, the current president. Two of them are Kikuyu. One, Uhuru Kenyatta, the current Minister of Finance and the son of Kenya's first president. So he comes from very long lineage of the establishment, has lots of land holdings, etc. The other, the current head of the civil service, Francis Muthaura, essentially runs the government. So the fact that these two people are in the dock or likely to be at the dock at The Hague is a major, is a tidal wave. And it also affects the way of thinking because these people essentially operated as if they were above the law, as did the others on the other side, William Ruto, Henry Koske, and to a much lesser extent, the Joshua Tsang, a broadcast a journalist who was going to be before The Hague. But this group as a whole essentially played ethnic politics, felt they were above the law, engaged in corrupt practices, and essentially felt that they could go on doing this forever. If the case, in fact, is tried before The Hague, because that decision hasn't been made yet, it's unlikely that two of the six, that is Kenyatta or Ruto, will be able to stand for president in 2012. So one short-term implication is that it will have a dramatic impact on next year's presidential race. But the real impact, if they're brought to book, and particularly if only two or three of them are convicted, is that it's going to be a major step forward for changing the attitude and ending the culture of impunity that has thrived among the political class over the last 20 years.
So the 2012 presidential elections are an obvious potential trigger of instability. Does Kenya risk a repeat of the violence that we saw at the last election?
Well, only a fool would say that the risk is not there. And in some communities, the continuation of ethnicity as a factor is very much present. There are reports that some groups are arming themselves. And yet, although there are those negatives, there are others who are very much on guard on preventing a repeat in the following way. First of all, I think you're going to see an electoral commission emerge, although the permanent commission has not emerged yet, that is going to be far more professionally competent, particularly in the counting of the vote. The actual holding of the last election was a very good election until it came to the counting of the vote. But the counting of the vote will be much more professionally done. There will undoubtedly be a parallel vote count to hold the electoral commission accountable. The police were not adequately deployed last time. Provisions have already been made to see that the security forces are better prepared for the job. I think Kenyan civil society is going to be much more aggressive. So I'm not saying that violence is not going to occur, but I don't think it's going to occur to the point of risking a political breakdown that occurred last time. Nonetheless, if there's a close election, and it could be again, it is in close elections that the risk of violence is the greatest. But steps will be taken to avoid this because no one, particularly at a leadership level, wants to see a repeat of what happened in January of 2008.
Well, thank you. Finally, what's your overall assessment of Kenya's prospects for stability in the coming decade? Are you optimistic about it?
I am optimistic. I put the adjective cautiously, in, or I guess the adverb cautiously, but I am cautiously optimistic. And it goes back to the response to my your question of a moment ago. Kenya's rising middle class. There is a business class there that is demanding both democracy and the rule of law, not out of some, you know, simply because they're idealists, but because they know this is the way they can make money. So that is that element on the business side. But there's also a professional middle class there. Computer scientists, chartered public accountants, lawyers, you know, scientists at the university. Kenya has an incredible collection of talent, particularly of a younger generation, that is to say, people from roughly their late 20s, early 30s, through their mid-40s. This is a very exciting group. and they're committed to stability and democratic rule over the years ahead, for again, because in order to practice their professions, they require it. And it's that group that makes me optimistic. They're pushing away the old guard, a landed elite, which was really only interested in ethnic politics. That guard, particularly the generation around President Kibaki, is finished. They're over.
Well, Dr. Barkin, thank you. You can read the whole report, Kenya, Assessing Risk to Stability, by going to our website at csis.org/program/Africa. You can catch this and all the interviews in our Africa interview series on iTunes U.